Michael Anderson, and he's the convener of Sovereign Union. Remember, just before the referendum finished, they had a big meeting. The GLPs and the Waddies had a big meeting. I think there was about 34 that came together up in Anangu country to discuss the future. Then they were going to set up a meeting. Well, Michael was going to set up a meeting in Canberra and see if they could bring all the senior lawmen down to Canberra. So we'll find out what his thoughts are there. And you can pick that up, that interview that I did on the 17th of October with Michael Anderson. So also too, he has concerns, like a lot of people have concerns, that the refusal to legislate or ratify the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People into Australian domestic law. And Michael's also questioned the Indigenous Land and Sea Corporation's ability to promote self-determination through economic independence. And they went over to Canada, talked to First People over there. So we'll find out his thoughts and where we are heading in 2024. And as I said, I put in a lot of phone calls to different people and I'm just waiting to hear back, but I know a lot of people are pretty busy, and a lot of people are pretty stressed out by the end of this year, as we've had the pandemic and then the referendum. So people, I think, are looking at what will the future be for First Nation people. And then we've heard, I don't know if you've heard, in Aotearoa, where they're talking about changes to the Waitangi Treaty, and also too in regards to Maori language being dropped in some areas over there with the new Prime Minister. So it's going to be interesting, because they always push it how it works over there. Yeah, so, oops, I've just got a flash message here. Yes, no, that's Michael Anderson, yep. So we'll be doing an interview with Michael just shortly at 11:15. I'll just... And then, of course, we'll keep you updated with the news as it comes to hand, and always play your deadly music. So we're going to kick this hour off a little bit of Blackfire, band from down there in Nam, and that was got together by Grant Hansen, and this one is Aboriginal Land, and then we'll be shooting out to talk to Michael. Oh, yes, okay. And you're listening to Black Chat here. We're coming to you live and deadly through the National Indigenous Radio Service coming out of Turbayagra country up there in Mingin. And don't forget, we're still on 93.7 FM in Sydney. You can pick us up on DigiTube or download the free Koori Radio app. Meanwhile, last month, just before the referendum, caught up with Michael Anderson from the Sovereign Union, and they had a big gathering of GLPs and lawmen up there, what is up in the Northern Territory. And they were going to, Michael was going to get a meeting put together in Ngunnawal Ngambra country down there in Canberra. But then Michael, unfortunately had some sorry business in the family. Then he went to the big gathering, the sovereignty gathering in Brisbane, up there in Mingin, on the 9th and the 10th. And we were talking to Wayne Wharton. He said one of the outcomes was that they were going to ban or protest at every sporting event. So we thought Michael was a speaker at that event, and we'll find out his thoughts there. And also, too, you know, the concerns with we knew that Australia signed on to the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People in 2009, but it hadn't been ratified. And now, it was only last week, I think it was, yes, they did not pass that legislation for the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People into domestic law, which would, you know, it's interesting. And also the other question that people have been asking is the Indigenous Land and Sea Corporation ability to self-determination. But they went off to Canada to talk to First Nation people. So this is interesting. How many, you know, what are First Nation people understanding about all these people running around the globe or running around the country? So we thought we'd catch up with Michael Anderson. And Michael, hey, welcome to Black Chat.
Good to be with you again, mate. And a happy Christmas, mate.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Happy New Year to all those who believe in that stuff, so...
Nah. Well, we know that this is probably going to be the worst Christmas ever. With the floods up in North Queensland, we've got the fires in northern New South Wales, and I think it's southern New South Wales. We've got a lot of people who are hungry. People are requesting not toys and presents, they're requesting tents and sleeping bags and that, Michael. Have you heard that?
But the other thing, too, is that, you know, in the last few months, we've lost so many of our elders and statesmen and women and family. It's not going to be a Christmas to remember. It'll be a Christmas to remember the sorry business and all the wrongs that have happened this year, yeah.
Yeah, it's really serious, because sometimes I'm a bit scared about ringing people or mentioning people's names, because I don't know if they're passed over or not. We've just had so many. I mean, some communities, a person's dying each month, each week, or a couple.
Oh, shocking. It's shocking.
And it's like when you don't answer the phone, I thought, oh, have you gone yet or what? Nah. No, it's just, you know what it is. It's like Michael Mansell, you know, I've been trying to get under him, and I'm a bit worried about, you know, is he still there or is he just having time out, you know? And I know a lot of people are suffering out there and trying to have time out, because there's a lot of issues that need to be covered. Now, you went to the meeting up in Mingin on the 9th and the 10th, and you were one of the spokespeople there. How did that meeting go? And your thoughts,
well,
yeah.
From my point of view, it highlighted the fact that a lot of our community members are lost.
Yep.
And and you know, all those things that have happened in the last, well, let's say since the Aboriginal Embassy. All the gains that we made over those years have disappeared, and our people sit in communities with absolutely nothing, and the government is responsible, and the Black Agency, I might add, who, like the Peak Bodies, have contributed to destroying any self-determination objectives. That we had, like the housing companies have disappeared. We don't have Black housing companies anymore, except the one in Sydney.
Yep.
And I don't know any others around the country with their own houses. Like, you know, take Perth, for example. Now, they build all those houses over there for the people, and then what? They then bulldoze them all into the ground. Now, you know, what's going on? And the other thing about, you know, self-determination went out the door when Malcolm Fraser came into government, and you know, Bob Hawke and his cronies, you know, started allowing the slide against self-determination, and in fact the Black organisations that were folded up under him John Howard finished it off when he came to power, and 440 Aboriginal organisations were shut down under John Howard's regime, not to mention the
finances as well. He cut $460 million off.
The emergency in Northern Territory.
Yeah, well, in the Territory, it's the same. Look, let's go back. You were at the Tent Embassy. What was the thing that after that Tent Embassy in 72, what was the main thing or one of the main thing that came out for First Nation people?
The primary aim was when Whitlam used to come across with Kep Enderby, Lionel Murphy and their senior executive, and we used to have senior executive government members sitting on the lawn with us,
yeah.
And there are pictures and around and so on. We sat down and we negotiated with them that they were going to set a pathway to set an objective to achieving self-determination. That meant black-owned medical services, legal services, housing companies, economic development strategies within the communities and preschool programs owned and run by black people, setting up bilingual, bicultural educational programs within that. But that lasted until he got sacked. And then came in a totally different regime and they turned that on its head and we lost everything.
So that wasn't, none of that was legislated?
No, it wasn't legislated because what was happening was that we were agreeing, we were going around setting Aboriginal organisations up and we were encouraging, you know, people in Brisbane, for example, Melbourne, who started legal services, medical services, Perth, Adelaide. And so these objectives began to roll out and of course, the Department of Aboriginal Affairs was placed with the responsibility of funding those initiatives.
Mm.
And so Aboriginal organisations were starting to become self-determining, and we had control. We owned those services, and they were funded by the Commonwealth. And I guess that's where the mistake was that there was nothing set in place that allowed for independent funds to come in, become involved. And because all these programs were dependent on Commonwealth money, and so it was very easy for any government to change the policies and then, you know, we lose everything, and we did.
Well, that's the same as in the 70s too when they had to bring in Aboriginal employment services as well because people weren't able to get... I remember coming to Sydney and Social Security sending me to Aboriginal... And I went, what? Aboriginal employment. Go to Aboriginal employment. And the woman said to me, well, the last person I sent to an optometrist for reception has happened to be Aboriginal and they abused me for sending an Aboriginal person to that position. And I went, oh, that was really strange. So that's... I know that was really hard for people to get jobs back then. And then...
That reminds me of, you know, Brother John Newfong, the late Brother John Newfong. Robert Stone or whatever his name was who started 60 Minute program in Australia on Channel 9, he employed John Newfong as a reporter. And so John went out to do an interview with a garbage strike out of Bondi.
Yep.
And the garbage strike wouldn't talk to him because he was a black fella.
Yep.
You know, these are labourers collecting garbage, wouldn't talk to him on camera because he was an Aboriginal. And so, you know, Mr Stone, you know, John Newfong told me, he just said, well, if no one wants to talk to you because you're black, he said, what's the good of employing you? And so, you know, that all went down the drain.
Yeah, now, well, we're seeing some, you know, journalists now that are on the ABC, we've got Narelda on Channel 10. We've got a few of them that are in the newsrooms in the ABC and behind the scenes and other positions there. But, you know, here we are today and we've had the pandemic, which was kind of ironic that all of a sudden this turned up. And then all of a sudden we've got the referendum where, you know, everyone thought that it was going to be better for the betterment of Aboriginal people. But and then the whole thing about racism, and it really brought out racism to the forefront where people said, oh, we weren't a racist country. But they were saying that, you know, all the non-Aboriginal people. And I said, well, the non-Aboriginal people I met when I was out there with the referendum, they wanted detail. And they weren't getting any detail. So that's why a lot of people didn't, non-Aboriginal people didn't vote yes for the referendum. And then since then, we've actually heard nothing. So from the 70s to here, there was all these promises or things that were going to happen. And then, boom, you know, October.
What we got to remember, though, you know, when we look on these experiences, the fact is that we've been hogtied. And if you have a look at the laws since 1970s,
yep,
and have a look at the laws that they've written into play now, and this includes the Native Title Act, this includes the Indigenous Land and Sea Corporation Act, in IBA, have a look at those things. We must remember at all times that IBA and ILC, for example, are the two key organisations at this point in time.
Yep.
Those two organisations are all the people who are the board of that are personally appointed by the minister.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Secondly, those organisations are set up by statute under the CAPTI Act and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Commission Act. Now, if you have a look at those laws, you will find that, you know, Aboriginal people own nothing because they are Commonwealth institutions. They are answerable to the minister. Mm. They are not accountable or answerable to Aboriginal people. And that's the difference. Now, you know, they regard themselves as an NGO. NGOs are not funded by government, which they are.
Yeah.
Now, these organisations, when you look at them, like IBA is just a bank controlled by the Commonwealth Government. Indigenous Land and Sea Corporation were first designed to buy back land for Aborigines who would never be able to win a native title claim. Now, and that enables us to overcome freehold land and perpetual pasture lands because they can buy that land for the people to give back to them, which they would never be able to win under a Native Title Act. And the ILC, the government changed it, and they've now become a monstrous monopoly on land ownership. And quite frankly, they're illegally sort of doing contracts with Aboriginal people and placing restrictions by way of deeds of grant over these organisations, and they're unable to operate and they're unable to make money. But the ILC are operating their Voyages program, and these Voyager programs, unfortunately, the white people, the tourism industry is going to buck against that because this is a government institution and they are exempt from government taxes, etc. And that's quite unfair in terms of the marketplace and business and commerce. And so ILC are a monopoly, have become a monopoly, not for the benefit of the people who are supposed to be benefiting, but for the corporation and the government itself. Now, if we look at other laws in this country that relate to Aboriginal people, those laws, I classify themselves as laws that establishes apartheid regimes within Australia. And we need to look at that very closely because they separated our rights and made our rights very different from the rights of the normal citizens in this country.
Yeah.
That's something we need to look at very closely. When Lydia put the UNDRIP up, the UNDRIP was supposed to close these gaps and these apartheid regimes that exist. But it showed the Labor Party's true colours when they voted against it. And what is so disturbing is that the black Labor politicians, instead of abstaining, voted against it, unlike the black fellas in the Liberal Coalition Party who abstained, right?
Yep.
And so so they had a little bit more nous and a little bit more understanding that, you know, this is something that they didn't agree with the party politics and they abstained from it. And so whereas people like Mulindira McCarthy and you know, the others, Linda Burney, they voted for it against Aboriginal rights being incorporated into Australian law. But I can say this, that if you look at that in UNDRIP, all you have to do is, if you understand all the human rights pieces of conventions and covenants that exist around this world through the United Nations, the ICCPR, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, that's already part of Australian law.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at those, and this is where Aboriginal people don't pay attention, if you look at what those laws are, those laws establishes rights that we can apply them to our situation in this country and make the government respond accordingly in the legal system.
Yeah, but they've stopped. They've always stopped Aboriginal people and saying the mistruth. It's the same as, like, you know, what's happening here. They've always used the Waitangi Treaty, and New Zealand's always got this great deal. But we're just seeing now that the Prime Minister over there is, you know, wanting to change all that, even, the you know, having Maori language being spoken. So.
Yeah, well, the thing is that let's stay focused on Australia.
But they're probably using the same thing. You know, they're connecting up with the Tararoa, with the...
Lola, I'm trying to inform our people.
Yep, sorry.
Have a look at the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, please.
Yep.
Because if you look at that their covenant is international law, a human rights law, and our people can use that in this legal system here because Australia brought it in 1975. And they become a party to it, and it's now incorporated into Australian law.
Yeah.
The second international law that comes into play, which gives us very strong legal rights and cultural rights in particular, is the International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. Now, if you look at that one, the ICESCA one, that's also brought into Australian law in 1985. That's how long it's been here for.
So which one's that? Say that again, the Economic and Cultural...
The International Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights.
And social, okay. You've
now
got that?
That's incorporated into the Australian legal system.
Yeah.
So our people, because our people are not aware of this and pay no attention and have not paid enough attention to it in terms of the so-called educated blackfellas who reckon they're fighting for our rights, why aren't they telling our people what those laws are that are now incorporated into Australian law and tell the people how we can apply those laws to fight this racist system that we're confronted with.
Especially when we've got legal people out there, both non-Aboriginal and Aboriginal, that are out there that should be advising our people. I mean, we do have people that are helping, but not to this extent of educating our people on these, you know, the civil and political rights.
Look. Sister Girlie, if those white and black lawyers, you know, you got to remember, they're obliged to the bar, to understanding and upholding the bar, you know, the legal system, and within that legal system, if they're required to tell people, oh, this is a test case, it may get up, it may not get up, and therefore, you know, a lot of them are not encouraged to take on test cases of any kind. And you only have the brave that will do that.
Yep.
But essentially, they stick within the confines of what is written in the legislation. And because it's written into the legislation, these two particular laws, international laws, are part of Australia, then those black and white lawyers should be smacked in the head with a stick because they should know, they know that we can apply those laws and take them to the court. If we consider that legislation is violating those laws, and we need to pay attention. And so it seems to me that we can't rely on those white and black lawyers because they're too wrapped up in the legal system, and they're blinded by the fact that they have an obligation to that Western legal system. And like a lot of lawyers don't like running test cases because, you know, they want to win favours with government, and they want the government to contract them to do government work in courts. So,
and they make money. You know, they make money.
Yeah, it's about money, mate.
It's all money.
And money speaks all languages, and I'll tell you, money don't speak Aboriginal languages, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Also, too, then, so, you know, I've been trying to work out treaty. I've been trying to read up on different treaty, and it's just really confusing. Should we have a treaty, or what do we need to have, Michael, with your knowledge and what you've been, you know, reading up on?
Well, my knowledge is that, look, a treaty, when you're talking about treaty, you're entering into basically a contract between parties. Now, a contract is an offer and an acceptance, Now, when you go through that process, first of all, the Crown has asserted their rights to be the sovereigns of this country, And their laws are what dominates us and what oppresses us. Now, the question that we ask is that if we're going to talk about treaties, well, then first of all, let's work out whether or not the Australian government are going to ask the Crown of Bonnie King Charles whether or not he's prepared to give up certain claims of sovereignty in exchange for Aboriginal people giving up certain things. Because, you know, it's not going to be a straight deal. If I say to people, walk away from treaty if the question of British sovereignty is not on the table for discussion. Because if that don't happen, well, then all you're doing is that you're becoming a slave to the system that now controls you.
Okay, if the British have got the sovereignty, I mean, then we had the Mabo case because they said, you know, there was nobody here. But then we had the Mabo case in 92 where we know that everyone was here. So is that still legally binding, or shouldn't we have those rights since then?
It's still legally binding. But look, there are a lot of things in Mabo where it's still open-ended, yeah?
Yep.
So there's a lot of things. Like, for example, just to give you an example, Mabo said that the Crown did not get a beneficial radical title. That means they didn't get ownership of the land and the minerals and all the flora and fauna, because they couldn't get that because the law at the time in England said that if someone was already in occupation of those lands, then the Crown could not get a beneficial radical title. Now, there's several court cases. There's a key court case on this, and Mabo quotes it, and that's Attorney General versus Brown, 1847 or something like that there. Now, the second part to this is that Mabo also said that the Crown, the Crown obtained a tenure of some kind. Now, that's what they say in Mabo. So what type...
Well, what is a tenure? What do you mean, a tenure?
Well, a tenure is the land title.
Oh, tenure. Sorry, I didn't mean your accent. Yeah, tenure. Yeah, sorry.
So Mabo didn't identify the type of tenure that wipes out our existence and our rights. The third part of the Mabo judgment that's still open to question is the fact that they say that a valid act erases Aboriginal rights. Now, they did not describe what a valid act was. So the bloke who fought the case, the lawyers who fought the case, Ron Caston, the late Ron Caston, and people like Brian Keown Cohen and others, these fellas contributed to writing the Native Title Act.
Hmm.
And what do? They wrote in there their interpretation of what constitutes an extinguishment of Aboriginal rights. They had no bloody right to do that. Hmm. Yeah? No right whatsoever.
So the
whole question of tenure is still up in the air.
Yeah. So where do we go now? What should people be aware? Where should we be going? And, you know, because we've had the referendum and people are, you know, out there going, oh my goodness. But where are we going, Michael? What's your thoughts on?
For me as a 1960s, 70s young black fella, the picture was we wanted this land back because we were under occupation, under an illegal occupation, yeah?
Yep.
Now, if you look at the advice given by the International Court of Justice on the question of the taking over of Palestinian land, it said that they were in occupation, And that was an illegal occupation. And they described what an illegal occupation was. And that fits with everything that happens here in this country.
Yep.
It fits perfectly. It's the same thing. So we need to look at what the International Court of Justice advised the Security Council on the UN, right? Yep. That they had a right to, that we are occupied. And it's an illegal occupation. And so that's where we got to start looking at. So when we're talking about treaties, we have to look at the illegal state of this occupation that we have. And that's why I say, if we're going to negotiate treaties, all that we want to negotiate has to be on the table, including the King's assertion of sovereignty over this country.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that...
If that's not on the table,
yep.
You know, then blackfellas are just stupid and they should walk away from it.
Well, I said just frustrated. I think it's interesting too because what's happening over in the Middle East there or Palestine is they're giving out us laws, international laws, that relate to right across this continent. And I think that's a good thing too. And hopefully there are people that are listening to that and understand the International Courts of Justice and talking about, you know, this land, well, their land is being, you know, occupied. So hopefully things will start to click in people's heads if they
yeah,
are.
But, but the thing is that you've got the racist elements within Australia who say that doesn't account for Australia, right, which is a lot of bunkum.
Yeah.
And so we need to remind people that Australia is an occupation.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot of things to be worked out here. And so if they're going to go down this truth and reconciliation and treaty process, well, then the first truth is that they must admit that they are illegal occupiers of lands, of people. And as Mabo said, if the land was already occupied, then the Crown did not get the right. And the Crown is exercising a quasi-government agency that's illegally operating within this country, but they're operating legally to protect white interests.
Yep.
But those white interests go against Aboriginal interests, and that's what we have to work out.
Well, I suppose English interests rather than white. I said there's no such thing as white. It's usually...
Well, let's say the English system, yeah?
Yes, the English system.
Can I remind you that, you know, for those historian buffs, you know, have a look at how Rome... conquered and settled all these other countries.
Exactly.
And have a look at how they pushed back on Rome. Because let me tell you, England has taken, and England has a lot of documents that they took from Rome, from the Rome Senate, and they've applied the methodologies to acquire land and occupy lands and take lands from people the same way the Romans did.
That's true. Yeah, it's just the same as like the Greeks and the Turks. And there's all this history about these different countries, the same as like us. It's like us. It's like putting all Europe into Australia and then having the same thing. But the English, getting all these bits and pieces and taking it from Europe and then putting it together as their law.
That's right. Study what Alexander the Great they did, you know?
Yep.
Have a look at what they did. They just went in and, you know, and if you objected, they shot you. They killed you.
Yeah.
And then they just took everything off you, and then they applied their law, and they put people in place to make sure that their laws were abided by. If you didn't, they shot you. Done.
Yep.
Or lock you up in jail, which is what the Australians do to Aboriginal people in this country.
Yeah, no, it's true. South Africa had the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Canada had their Truth Commission there. So why can't we... here in Australia have the Truth and Reconciliation, you know, de Klerk and there's a lot of them got off over there in South Africa because of what Mandela did and to try to make peace and move forward. But now the country's in, you know, a state of flux over there as well. So the whole world is slowly imploding.
Yeah, it didn't work. They forgave the people who were heading up the illegal regimes of apartheid and the killings that they did, and the mass killings, mind you, which basically was genocide. Here in this country, everybody needs to know that we have a federal court decision in Canberra where the judge, Justice Crispin, accepted the fact after a four-day hearing, which I became a party to, and we proved, and Justice Crispin made a ruling that genocide has occurred in this country. That's a decision of the federal court.
Yeah. When was that? What year? What year was that, Justice Crispin?
Oh, gee, that was in the 1990s. The exact year. Justice Crispin was the judge. Other people, who've been involved. It's called Nulyarima v. Commonwealth. Nulyarima and others v. Commonwealth. And
how do you spell that? How do you spell that? No, what is it?
Nulyarima, Nulyarima, or Nulyarima, something like that.
Something like Nulyarima, okay.
Good heavens.
Yeah, in the early, probably the 90s.
Yeah, anyway, it was in the 90s, and, it may have been 2000s, actually, because I was in the United States. But anyway, it's a federal court decision. And the judge said that, yes, the evidence that was presented at that court and argued at that court, genocide has occurred in this country. And we proved that the statutes and the laws that were operating in this country around Australia were designed to wipe out Aboriginal people. Mm. In fact, one of the statements in the 1930 conference by a bloke called A.L. Neville, the Aboriginal...
Oh, yes, A.L. Neville.
Yeah, when he said, you know, in 50 years, this is 1936 or 37 or thereabouts, 1937, when he said, in 50 years' time, so that's 1988, we should forget that there were ever any Aborigines in Australia.
Yep.
Now, that came from a government, senior government bureaucrat responsible supposedly for the protection of Aborigines. Now, so we proved that the government statutes were designed to wipe us out through assimilation and everything else that went on, stealing of children, they're all elements. Now, because that happened, nobody's ever taken that up and nobody's ever forced the issue on genocide. And so, but everybody's focused on the fact that, you know, that when they went to the High Court, the High Court said Australia doesn't have a law against genocide. And that is true.
Yeah.
Genocide has occurred, but Australia doesn't have a law against genocide. Australia has a genocide law. Yes, they do. But it only applies to soldiers operating overseas.
Yep.
Right? And so, but here internally, they put a clause in there, two clauses in there, that made it so that the Genocide Act is not applicable within Australia. And what's even worse is that the only person who can take a case of genocide in Australia, you have to wait until to ask the Attorney General if he would take the case. And there's no Attorney General in this country who's going to take a case for genocide against his own mob.
Okay, then. Look, Michael, you were going to organise a meeting in Canberra, and you were hoping to bring down the waddies and the lawmen from the Territory and others, calling people from around the country. Are you still doing that, or is there other meetings being set up?
I'm still trying to do that. I think it's absolutely essential, because there are some key legal factors that we need to talk about, like the ones that I just told you about.
Yeah, that's what
I
meant.
In terms of those international laws. But more importantly, there are a number of other constitutional issues that exist within the Australian Constitution that we can use to make these authorities
accountable. No, so that, I mean, this is good. I mean, Wayne said that they were going to protest all the sporting events when they come into Australia. And
yeah, can I just say that, you know, that's one good thing to be, you know, for civil disobedience.
Yeah.
But what we want, and this is what we were always told by our elders who gave us advice during the political days of the 70s, you know, and if the families allow me, people like, you know, Ujira Nunnacle, people like Don Davidson, people like Don Brady, people like old Frank, Pastor Frank Roberts, people like Tika Dixon and Ozzie Cruz,
these types
of people, and Lyle Munro.
Yep.
Their advice used to be, first of all, we don't need leaders who are dead.
Yep.
We don't need martyrs, right? Secondly, you can't lead if you're in jail. And secondly, we have to be cunning, because they have the guns. They have the power. They have the manpower. Now, so we have to become smart and be very smart about the way we go about business. And we always must remember that anything that we do that derogates from our rights will impact on our future generations.
Yep.
So when we're fighting a fight, you do not do anything that causes problems for your future generations.
Mm.
We've got to make sure that we are looking after our people and setting something up for our future generations. We are not there to shut down opportunities. Now, that means, you know, we don't have to suck eggs, but what we can do is be smart about it, and we need support. We don't need to turn those people away from us.
Yeah.
And there's one thing that we can do. You know, people love Aboriginal people in the sporting arena. We excel in the sporting arenas. We don't need to go out there and say we're going to run onto pits and we're going to run and do this here and block pits. No, that's not what we do. We have to just simply be cool, calm and collected and say, here, people, when you're going in, have a thought about this. You can stand outside with placards, you can do all that sort of stuff, but we don't need to turn people against us.
Yeah, no, that's true. I think that's true. Look, Michael, look, thank you very much. It's a lot for people to think of. If people want to keep up, they'll keep on to your Sovereign Union website.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there.
Oh, there's heaps of stuff. There's heaps there, but it's a lot of people not understanding this. We've got a lot of our younger generation who are going off to university and being educated in the Western way, but they're not learning about, you know, the real facts of how it's impacted on First Nation people here.
Well, and I'm still wanting to pull together a national conference which includes the elders and our youth and other people. We need to have a national convention, and then from there we work out a strategy that will help all of us go forward, because we have a common enemy and we can develop a common series of approaches that will help us to achieve that which we seek.
Fantastic. Look, thank you very much, Michael. And as I said, I'll get around to other people around the country, but that hopefully gives you something to think about, everybody. And we'll keep on talking to other people around the country as well. Michael, thanks very much. And I hope you're able to have a good Christmas with your family, and we'll be back in the new year.
You have a good one too, and all your listeners, I hope you're all well and enjoy the festive season.
Yeah, and thank you for keeping up, giving us information and that, and all the times that you've been available for interviews for Black Chat, okay? So I'll be back with you in 2024. Don't you worry about that.
Good on you, mate. Enjoy yourself.
You too. Bye for now. And that was our deadly Michael Mansell there from Sovereign... Michael Anderson. I always get them mixed up. We're trying to get hold of Michael Mansell from down in Tasmania, down in the Big Island. But get onto Michael Anderson's Sovereign Union website. He's always putting up a lot of facts up there. And you don't have to believe him. Just follow it up yourself. As he said, you know, the international economic and cultural and social rights, also to the international civil and political rights of First Nation people too. So you can look at those, and it's interesting how they're talking at the moment about Palestine and Israel in the international courts and what the justice is, and they're under occupation. So, yeah, very interesting, and we'll keep it up. So here we go, a little bit of the Black Armband with Our Home is Our Land. And you're listening to Black Chat, coming to you live from Gadigal Country and broadcasting to the National Indigenous Radio Service, coming out of Turba Yagara Country in Mingin. I'm your host, Lola Forrester.
Reached a new day, through our old ways we will learn. Reached a new day, through our old ways we'll return. Now you're listening, not just hearing the tears of our people who've been sheltered up for years. Without the land, you could not eat, you cannot sleep. Listening, now you're listening, not just hearing the words of a people who've been crying out to be heard. Take a moment to open up your heart. Look around you, it's been here from the very start. Without the land, you could not eat.
And a great track there from the Black Arm Bands, and you're listening to Black Chat. And as I was just talking with Michael Anderson, so yeah, the debate over race relations rage in New Zealand as new government repealed key social politics, and that's only just come in a few hours ago. And they said, for a country once slandered for its approach to racial inclusion, New Zealand's new government will now get to work on its 100-day plan against a backdrop of a protest movement that is galvanising and growing in strength. So as I said, what we have seen in this government is taking us into a decline like we've never seen in race relations, certainly not since the early stages of colonisation. And this is the head of the Māori Party, the co-leader and member. And yes, she said the ABC, the government was unwinding policies designed to improve the outcomes of Māori and Pacific Islanders. So the government has also disbanded the Māori health services and minimised the use of Māori language in the public service. So here we go. We'll be hearing probably a lot more of what's happening across across the waters there.